Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. It's the 30th of August. The sun is rising, and Jesus, the Son of God, is risen. And that is good news indeed. Again this morning, that tomb is empty. And we start out our Faith Radio Morning Show with that central truth that Jesus has risen, and in his kingdom, there is always hope and always future. We talk a lot about the news headlines of the day and lifestyle stories here on Faith Radio. And we'll do so from the perspective that even though our lives may be difficult at times and the news headlines are troubling, that there's always hope in the one kingdom that will remain until the end. And so this is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner. Happy to be joined by State Fair superfan Logan Roush here in studio, who will be on Carmen LaBurge's afternoon show today talking about what it means to be a State Fair superfan. We're excited for him on that. And Paul Perreault in the newsroom, who keeps the news flowing and the guests coming throughout the morning that can speak to the news from this Christian perspective and bring in guests that can help me have conversations for all of us in the listening audience on matters of faith and family and church together. And it's one of the things that I love about getting up in the morning like this and doing this show. It's just the daily reminder as we talk about the news and the and these questions that I think we so often have. We don't do so as Republicans and Democrats. We respect our government. We respect the ideology of each side of the aisle. But we really are Christians who are citizens of heaven. And the guests that we have on each day really want them to present a balanced view of that. I appreciated Cal Thomas in particular yesterday, who reminded us that though we have Republicans and Democrats in our country, obviously, we've tried the best of the ideologies from both sides of the aisle, and we've been left wanting as believers relative to what constitutes a true kingdom of peace and rest. And it led me to an article last night that I was reading on Desiring God website that Rachel Jones wrote, and she reminded me of those beautiful people in Hebrews 11 that really are our faith ancestors that walked out this life in the uncertainty of the future, didn't always know where they were headed. There was trouble and travail for them. And she brought in that Hebrews 11, 13 through 16 passage, which says this, that these people of faith that I have mentioned, the author of Hebrews, died without ever receiving all that God had promised them. But they're still all awaiting them on ahead, and they were glad, for they agreed that this earth was not their real home. They were just strangers visiting down here. And quite obviously, when they talk like this, they were looking forward to their real home in heaven. If they had wanted to, they could have gone back to the good things of this world, but they didn't want to. They were living for heaven. And now God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has made a heavenly city for them. And that's who we are. We are citizens of heaven as we gather together on Faith Radio Mornings. Each morning as you listen, whether for the entire program or just catch 20 minutes on your drive, we want it to be from a place that you really can feel anchored and know that you're part of the beautiful kingdom. And our first guest I know is that way too. Ben Johnson of the Acton Institute is a reverend, fellow believer, joins me each Thursday morning here on Faith Radio to talk through some of the headlines of the day with some humor, some fun, and some wisdom and insight. We're going to talk with Ben first about some of the news coming out of Washington, D.C., that the president has welcomed evangelicals into the White House and has been a real strong advocate, so it seems, for the evangelical community. But we might want to be a little bit careful before we become bedfellows across the board with state and government and the church. So Ben's going to get into that with us next year on Faith Radio Mornings.
This is my right, a right given by God, to live a free life, to live in.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and that intro music represents the entrance of Ben Johnson of the Acton Institute, who joins me each Thursday morning on Faith Radios to talk about the news of the day. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Peter.
So, you know, I love having you on. We talked, I don't know if you caught the opening segment at all, but just that idea from Hebrews, right, that we really are citizens of heaven, that we are strangers in a strange world. We often feel that way, I think, as believers when we just see some of the headlines of the day, right?
That's right. I think that we all know we're on a journey that God is in control of, and we know the final destination, but the steps between here and there are as mysterious to us as they were to Abraham.
And that, you know, that uncertainty, right? What so many of us want to have certainty in our lives moving forward. And I think we do a lot from a vocation standpoint or try to get money in the bank or relationally. We lean into a lot of things in this world to try to develop that sense of security.
Yes. You know, Abraham also wanted to have that kind of security. He relied upon his own insight and the insight of others, and so often led him into the wrong situation and could lead him astray. The Israelites relied upon themselves when they saw Moses disappear onto Mount Sinai, and they decided to make a golden calf in order to worship. And ultimately, any time that we rely on our own wisdom instead of walking by faith and not by sight, we're going to end up going down the wrong road, and it will take us much longer to get to our destination than it would have if we just had faith and patience.
That's a great, great story, too, a reminder of the golden calf and just how often we do go to those golden calves for worship. Well, we do have some pretty significant headlines from a Christian standpoint and how it mixes with Washington, D.C. this week, where President Trump has welcomed quite a number of evangelicals and has been extolling his policies relative to what it's done for evangelicals. So we'll listen in on him and get your comments on this.
We're here this evening to celebrate America's heritage of faith, family, and freedom. As you know, in recent years, the government tried to undermine religious freedom. But the attacks on communities of faith are over. We've ended it.
Well, as helpful as that might be, I'm pretty convinced that it hasn't been ended, Ben. But what was your take on some of what the president had to say there?
Well, to the extent that it was within the ability of one person to try and end it, I think we're moving in the right direction, let's say it that way. I thought that for the most part his speech was good, that the objectives and the policies that he mentioned were all worth extolling. So I didn't have any problem with that. It was a welcome change in tone for the most part over the previous administration, most assuredly. So I had no trouble with that. The only trouble that I would have is the one that you mentioned in that opening segment, which is being too closely aligned in our minds with the objectives of government or with government in general. We have responsibilities as citizens. We have duties as citizens to provide good government, to be good citizens, to be informed, and to do what a good citizen would do in any situation, whether it's voting or participating in government in other ways. But when it's all said and done, the Church of Jesus Christ isn't based in Washington, D.C., and we need to be able to make that separation in our minds.
Well, and to your point, you released a great article a couple days ago here on the Acton Institute website. You can find it at acton.org. And the title of your blog post here, Ben, was that the church that lives by the state shall die by the state. And to your point, we can applaud and be grateful for those who support religious liberty from a political standpoint in our country. But, you know, to just then fully align ourselves as believers with the government, if the lessons of history tell us anything, that might get dicey pretty quickly, especially as you pointed out in your article, there's some background for this with communism in Czechoslovakia. So talk us through what happened back then.
Sure. Well, Czechoslovakia became communist in 1948. And the first thing that the communists do in any nation that they take over is immediately undermine religious liberty. In many cases, they try to infiltrate the church with their own agents, as well as simply oppressing it and trying to stamp it out altogether or outlaw it. In the Czech Republic, the Czech Republic today is the most atheistic nation in the world. And you think, well, it's because they had atheism enforced upon them. Something as much as 72% of Czechs, according to some surveys, do not believe in God. But the actual history of the situation is a little bit more complicated. The Czech Republic has had religion forced on them as well, multiple times over. Every time that that intervening a national authority that forced people into church would let up, people would make an exodus from the church, and then there would be an inevitable falling away from religion in general. So in the 1620s, after the Protestant Reformation, which had some followers in the Czech Republic, Emperor Ferdinand II of the Holy Roman Empire introduced Catholicism, reintroduced it by force. Tens of thousands of Protestants had to flee their country. And when the Habsburg Empire came to an end in 1918, one of the largest changes of all time, more than a million people, including 300 priests, left the Catholic Church. So It was obvious that that was an artificial government-sponsored situation where everyone was belonging to a church because they physically had to. However, most of those million people, some of them went to other churches, but many of them didn't go anywhere. And then in 1948, the communist government tried to repress the Catholic Church, which was the largest church in Czechoslovakia by far. And many of them had to join the Orthodox Church. And the previous Archbishop of that area said that was the worst thing that ever happened to the Orthodox Church. When the Soviet tanks rolled in 1968, the Orthodox Church was associated with the Soviet Union. And so people came to vilify the Orthodox Church and to hate Orthodoxy in general. So anytime the government is involved in telling people to go to a specific church or compelling church attendance in any way, ultimately the church that's the short-term beneficiary will be the long-term victim of that, and the souls of those who followed will be harmed because they won't believe in the church, and it sort of inoculates them against receiving the gospel.
Well, and I think, too, in terms of when we look at history, as you so aptly do, that you can see lots of evidence of the fact that politicians are pretty shrewd in terms of their approach to these things and recognize that if they can get the churches on board with their policy, they really can gain the support of the entire country. And no less than even Nazi Germany, if you look back at that time, some of their first moves were to get the support of the state. And, of course, I'm not at all comparing our current regime here in the States to Nazi Germany. Just the idea that politicians know what they're doing and recognize that getting the support of certain constituency is critical for them staying in power.
Right. I wouldn't compare Trump, obviously, to Nazi Germany or Czechoslovakia or anything of that sort. Just to draw to people's attention, though, that I think that the relationship between church and state is very complex with a lot of different grades of importance. And the government can do a lot of things. The government can enforce Christian principles, and that's when government's at its very best. You know, laws against theft, murder, perjury, mandatory child support laws. These are all biblical morality that come from either the Ten Commandments or different places in Scripture. And when the government does that, it's doing the very best in acting in symphony with Christianity. Government leaders can give their own personal testimony. It's a little bit more problematic just because of the kinds of compromises that have to accompany most political lives. Some lives are not necessarily the best testimony of the faith that they profess, but some are. Obviously, religious imagery can be used in speeches. Presidents from the generations have always used that until very recently. Ronald Reagan was a master of it, Franklin Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy. So these were great illustrations that enhanced our sense of national unity. But then when the government begins to mandate church attendance or meddles in the religious sphere or the conscience in any case, it hurts everyone involved. And compulsion is not the same as persuasion. Take it from the Czech Republic.
That's great advice from Ben Johnson as we, as believers, think about how we partner with the government but aren't itself the government. Ben, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, there's going to be some more significant conversation. There has been around the Roe versus Wade decision with Judge Kavanaugh. Came out here recently that one of our famous charities, United Way, has been supporting Planned Parenthood, and I'd love to get your take on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. It is 21 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and talking with Ben Johnson of the Acton Institute. And Ben, when people want to kind of find your work and where you write as they are listening and want to follow up more, where can they find your writing?
Well, I'm senior editor of the Religion and Liberty Transatlantic website, so you can find that at acton.org. That's acton.org/publications/transatlantic. Or if that's a little bit too long, you can just go to acton.org. And then under publications, scroll down to Religion and Liberty Transatlantic. That's the portal that I oversee. I also blog at blog.acton.org.
Now, you do such a great job, Ben. We appreciate having you on here on Thursday mornings on Faith Radio. And if you want to join the conversation, you can call or text the studio at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And Ben and I would certainly welcome you in. And I know last night I saw a link that was being sent around with you and our news person, Paul Perot, around a video that's coming out. showing that United Way actually has been supporting Planned Parenthood. And this is going to be one of those conversations that's going to go nowhere but up in our country with Judge Kavanaugh and the appointments coming up. Just talk us through what's happening there, Ben.
Well, sure. The United Way in the year 2016 gave about $2.7 million to Planned Parenthood. That's actually an increase over the previous year. That's enough to pay for at least 2,900 abortions at the highest rate that Planned Parenthood charges, possibly as many as 7,700 abortions. The United Way has responded. It says that it released an official statement that out of more than 1,100 affiliates in the United Way, quote, only a small number, less than 3%, provide direct support to Planned Parenthood. But it's not about the number of chapters of United Way that are supporting Planned Parenthood or something that is offensive to our conscience. It's about the fact that they're supporting them at all. So a pro-life group called Second Vote is asking people this year to give to other charities. You know, the word charity is in the Old Testament and in the old King James translation, I should say, is the word that they use in place of love. So our good works, our charity, should bring love to everyone involved, and all of God's children should never hurt them. So please remember that when you're choosing a charity this year.
Yeah, and speaking of charitable work as well, J.J. Watt is part of the Houston Texans of the NFL, and boy, has he been doing some charitable work lately as the NFL season is getting started. Kind of talk us through what he's been up to.
Yeah, well, J.J. Watt, you know, this restores your faith in humanity sometimes to see something like this. Hurricane Harvey cost $200 billion worth of damage, killed 88 people. J.J. Watt of the Houston Texans wanted to raise $200,000 for the victim. He ended up raising $41.6 million. His donations paid for 26 million meals, fixed 600 homes. So you know, it's really something else at a time where you feel that there are no sports heroes left because of domestic violence or a lack of respect for the flag and the national anthem or other areas where we may agree or disagree. Here's someone who's involved in sports, and I don't know what else is going on in his life, but this is certainly heroic. No law forced him to do this. The fact of the matter is a good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth good things.
Well, and there's something about people of faith and following Jesus. When we see these kind of headlines, it really does sort of restore the soul a little bit because we do. News is a funny thing, Ben, isn't it? I mean, what makes news or what tends to make news is the negative kinds of things. And that's what gets the clicks. And I'm not sure what that speaks of for the human condition. But to have these positive stories come out really does. It feels like water to the soul.
It does, and it tells us that you know, there are people who are in positions of high authority who have not forgotten the lessons of Scripture, who have not forgotten our common humanity, and that they're willing to use their power for something that's good. And it tells us that if we ever get into that position, maybe we could do the same thing ourselves.
And in terms of, you know, getting back to the United Way for just a moment, do you have suggestions for people that, you know, do want to give to charitable organizations? They really want to have a place to give their money and have it be meaningful and multiplied in the kingdom. Are there ways to vet charitable organizations? How do we kind of mine out what might be happening behind the scenes?
There are. It takes a fair amount of research. So the organization that I mentioned is called Second Vote. Which says that you know, not only do you get to vote with your vote, but then you also get to vote with your dollars. So they show the organizations that fund Planned Parenthood or organizations of that sort. That's one potential resource. But I would say it's very important to research also how much of your charitable dollar is actually making it to those for whom it is intended. Unfortunately, some of these charities have a high degree of administrative costs, so their high salaries or things of that sort, that end up diverting the charity away. So I would research that, and then when in doubt, you know, Jesus Christ called us to tithe to His kingdom, and His kingdom is at the church. So your local church is always, if it's like any church that I know, always in need of resources. So if there's any doubt or any question about that, your church is always a good place for your tithes, your offerings, and your Thanksgiving offerings as well.
That's Ben Johnson of the Acton Institute. Ben, before I let you run, I do need your perspective on something really important that came to my attention this morning, and that is that one of my producers who's in studio with me right now, Logan Rausch, is a State Fair super fan, and we have the State Fair going on here in the St. Paul area. I'm assuming Michigan, where you are, has a State Fair as well. Any suggestions for maybe what foods should he pace himself as he eats his way through the day, or how do we think about this, Ben?
I would take Rolaids by the cartonful if you could. That will help you and begin very early. The good thing about state fairs is you have long walks in between rides or things like that, so you get to work a little bit of it off. But almost everything is fried, so almost everything should be accompanied by milk with magnesia.
Well, I know he just got his Apple Watch. That'll, I'm sure, be able to monitor his health and steps throughout the day, so that's going to be super helpful. Hey, Ben, thanks for joining us as you do on Thursday morning to talk through these headlines of the day.
Thanks so much. God bless.
We'll take a break here for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News. In the second half of our first hour, we'll be joined by Bob Smetana, who will talk through some of the difficulties going on within the Catholic Church right now. So lots more to come on Faith Radio Mornings. Love that conversation with Ben Johnson of the Acton Institute. I just find it fascinating to navigating these conversations in the news where we talk about our faith and talk about news at the same time. We try not to be Republican or Democrat. The whole thing is so tricky and interesting. We just remember that we're citizens of heaven. But one of the news items out here recently is part of that whole deal. And it says that In God We Trust on U.S. currency has been upheld, that there is an ongoing conversation between atheists in our country and believers that we should have In God We Trust on the country's currency. So this is a conversation that probably doesn't have an end to it, but so love people like Ben who come on and talk about this from a Christian perspective. Well, up next we'll have Bob Smetana, who will be joining us to talk about some of the abuses in the Catholic Church and what we can see moving forward in that situation. So stay with us for him on Faith Radio Mornings. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, I had so much fun speaking with Keith Getty, who, along with his wife Christine, co-wrote the song In Christ Alone, that is such a popular song in our churches, and really is doctrinally sound. It's historically anchored. It really just moves us so deeply. And he was on just talking about the idea of worship in general and the importance of having music and worship in our lives as just that unique way in which we can intersect with God.
We talked earlier about how it affects, you know, a child before they can necessarily understand what they're singing, what plants the songs deep in them, and similarly how it affects a person with dementia who no longer knows what his daughter looks like, but clings to those songs because they sung them through their lives. And it's another example of why what we sing is important. People often say, it's just the words are important, the music's just a vehicle. And at one level, the music is just a vehicle, but actually art is important because it's important to God. So if we sing well-written hymns that will stand the test of time, I mean, even taking it from a devotional point of view or a pastoral point of view, that has a far greater effect on your spiritual life than singing contemporary worship songs.
I just love that invitation. You know, just to worship is more than just singing songs or biding time until we get to the sermon. And as important as sermons are, worship really hits us in a different kind of way and allows us to intersect with the presence of God. If you want to catch that entire segment, head to myfaithradio.com and you can search for worship or music or Keith Getty In Christ Alone. Any of these terms will get you to that segment we had yesterday with him. Well, coming up next, we will be joined by Bob Smetana, the editor-in-chief of Religion News Service, and he'll be talking a bit about the upheaval going on within the Catholic Church.
In Isaiah 50, verse 7, Isaiah said, I have set my face like a flint. It's the language of resolve or determination. This is Jim Garlow. What gets you off track, distracted from God's will for your life? It doesn't take much. We're so easily drawn off task. Experts say no one can really multitask. We think we can, but efficiency drops off with every added task or distraction. There's a phrase called missional drift. An agenda may be set by an organization to attend a goal, but if they're not diligent, they'll inevitably drift over time. Here's my point. The farther you get from God's Word, the more moral drift is likely to occur, often with dire consequences. Proverbs 4:20 and 21 warns, pay attention to my words. Incline your ears to my sayings. Don't let them escape from your sight. In other words, set your face like a flint. This is Jim Garlow.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and thrilled to be joined by Bob Smetana, who's the editor-in-chief of Religion News Service. And Bob, I appreciate you coming on this morning. There's so much to get to in terms of some of the headlines, especially coming out of the Catholic Church this morning. So good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Well, you're doing well. You know, it's always difficult to sort through all of these things. So I really appreciate you coming on to kind of talk through, especially, you know, I grew up in the Catholic Church, went to Catholic elementary school, and do have a historically profound appreciation for just how deep the theology goes back beyond the Protestant Reformation. But it doesn't mean that there hasn't been trouble both in the Catholic and the Protestant churches over the years. And we are in one of those seasons, aren't we, within the Catholic Church? And kind of talk us through what's happening.
Sure. So a couple of things are happening. So a couple of weeks ago, there was a big report out of Pennsylvania. The district attorneys for seven dioceses had been looking at their files of abuse of children, which went back 70 years and found hundreds of cases that the church had not reported or had covered up. And most of them ended around 2002. So in 2002, there was a very big scandal, mostly in Boston, which led to big changes in how Catholic churches handle those kinds of cases of abuse. So now if you're a priest and you are a clergy person in the Catholic Church, you are accused of abuse, you are immediately removed from ministry. They investigate you, they report to the police. But before that, they didn't. So there are in probably most dioceses files on abuse by priests going back for decades. And so the question has become what to do with those. So now some attorney generals are going back and looking those. So that's one huge thing, just that hundreds and hundreds of cases in Pennsylvania. The second thing is that Cardinal McCarrick, who was the Archbishop of Washington for a long time, had been this summer he was accused of abusing a teenage boy and removed from ministry. And but turns out he had been basically preying on young seminarians for years, and lots of people knew about it. Actually, reporters knew about it, but no one wanted to go on the record and say that this was the case and call him on the carpet. And what happened this last weekend is that the former papal nuncio, who's the ambassador from the Vatican to the U.S., Archbishop Pagano, put out a letter saying that he had told Pope Francis about McCarrick and that the Pope covered it up and actually let McCarrick fly all over the country, all over the world on the Vatican's business and cover this up. And so there's a few holes in Vigano's narrative. Vigano says that the former Pope, Pope Benedict, had sanctioned McCarrick and that Pope Francis let him out of those sanctions. There's not a lot of evidence that that happened because McCarrick was flying all over the country and meeting all over the world and holding mass in public with Pope Benedict during the time he's supposed to have been sanctioned. But there's a lot of question of what did the Vatican know about Cardinal McCarrick's abuse. And then in general, what about I guess the bigger question is, what about church leaders? How many cardinals and bishops have done disgraceful things, abusive things, and how long has it been covered up?
Well, and I think that's one of the real difficulties in this situation is obviously the actual abuse and the actual crime of it is absolutely horrifying. But then the tentacles of it begin to spread out, I think, for all of us. And then suspicion begins to be part of the whole thing. You just wonder, we live in such an era of spin and trying to control the information. And so I think naturally so, when we see these kind of headlines, we begin to wonder, so how deep did this actually go besides what's being revealed in the moment?
Oh, exactly. And then there's there's who do you believe based on your ideological or political or theological views. We see this in Protestant churches. You know, sometimes you don't believe a beloved pastor has done something. You think a reporter is reporting about it. Well, they're just disgruntled. And sometimes the people who blow the whistle on clergy are people who are angry and who have been hurt. And so, and sometimes people just don't want to go on the record. That's, as a reporter covering these kind of things, which I have for years, the hardest thing is to get people to say this actually happened. Because even in a church, no one wants to say the beloved pastor did something harmful or immoral or abusive. It's easier to, because clergy and pastors are beloved, you know, so it's hard to believe that they have done something wrong. And so even people who say, who raise questions unless they have, you know, kind of concrete proof are not believed.
And I think that's one of the tricky parts, too. As you mentioned, our pastors are so often beloved. And so when we see some of the headlines coming out of the Protestant church, out of Willow Creek, specifically in Chicago, about what was happening behind the scenes with Pastor Bill Hybels, who had had such an influence, there is this sort of knee-jerk reaction to want to protect on some level. And is that because, Bob, we're scared about what it might mean for our own faith if some of our heroes of the faith begin to fall?
Oh, I think we have put people on pedestals. That's one of the problems. I think it's just hard. I mean, church is like family. That's the way I think about it. Church is like family. And you think if your family or a dear friend has done something wrong, it's hard to believe that. And I think we don't know our pastors as well as we think we do. They are required to put on a kind of a face to say they're better than they are at times. And I think the other thing is it's just we don't want to believe it's true because we don't want to realize how human we are. You know, churches are you know, they're spiritual institutions. They're also human institutions, and so people will fall, sometimes you go to church and you impersonate yourself. You pretend to be someone you're not, and so the pastor's doing that too. And so sometimes we can't just say, we have a problem here. How do we fix it? And fixing it is hard. Fixing it's hard because you think the pastor is exhorting you to holiness and to become a better person and to come closer to God. And what if they is everything they said a lie? If they are fallen.
Gee, Bob, I've never impersonated myself walking into a church on a Sunday morning. You know, maybe my wife Hallie and I having, let's just say, a heated conversation on the way to church, and then it's always so fun for the two of us to greet the greeter at the door with a smile, and you know, say smile. God is good, right?
Yes, everything's good. Everything is. Mike Iaconelli, the late Mike Iaconelli, used to talk about that we just pretend everything is good, but I think that the deeper thing is that there are real. The things that make a pastor a great pastor, their charisma, their ability to influence people, their ability to motivate people to follow God into action, are also the things, if misused, can make them a great abuser because they get your trust and they can get you to do things and they get you to keep secrets. And you, so that's being a pastor is not an easy calling, not an easy job. And if you don't have good accountability, but even the Catholic Church, they have structural accountability, right? They have institutional accountability, but if the people in those roles can't say, okay, this happened and this is what we're going to do, we're going to call the police, we're going to remove them from ministry, we're going to so even in the case of McCarrick, the claim is that the Pope Benedict had sanctioned him and McCarrick didn't listen. Well, he's the Pope, you know, the Pope is the highest authority in the Catholic Church. If they speak, that the people shouldn't be able to defy them. And in fact, Pope Francis, when McCarrick was accused of sexual abuse, a teenage boy, ordered him to be out of public ministry. And so McCarrick is no longer functioning as a priest.
Yeah, Bob, and that piece of it, and it's so interesting within the Catholic Church, too. There's one extra piece, not just of the leadership and the shepherding of the leader, but there's really a sense in which the Pope is speaking from the very mouth of God. And so this is really, this is a bigger deal, I think, than maybe even the headlines are making out, just the infighting going on within the Catholic Church.
Well, and I think this reveals what has been behind the scenes, which is there is a, there are rival factions of where the church should be going and how they should be living out their faith and what this should be the priorities. And those Vaganos on one side of that, Pope Francis is on another. So these are folks who don't like each other and have decided to make them public. And they're in some cases, the abuse scandal is revealing this bigger. So that's the problem. So people don't believe what he says, not based on whether it's factual, but based on which side of the aisle they're on. And there are things that Vaganò has said that just don't add up. For example, that McCarrick was out of the public eye. He wasn't. But did the Pope know? They raises the questions. Did the Pope know that this because reporters knew that this archbishop had, there were rumors galore about him, but no one wanted to go public. So did the Pope know, and did the Pope ignore that for some reason?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch how this plays out, Bob, in the weeks and months to come. We'll take a short break. When we come back, you talked about just that what religious leaders and pastors have to deal with, and it seems like increasingly so with the rise of mental illness in our culture, that's a tricky spot for pastors to be in. So we'll cover that and what your thoughts are on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined on the line by Bob Smetana, who's the editor-in-chief of Religion News Service. And Bob, before the break, we were just talking so much about pastoral leadership and some of the difficult headlines that are coming out. And on the other side of it, in fairness to pastors, boy, there's a lot going on in our society today, including the rise of mental illness. And I went through seminary, Bob, and I think we had exactly zero classes on how to help people in issues of mental illness. And yet, the pastor is often the first person that people go to for help in this situation. So kind of talk us through what's happening these days.
So a couple things. Mental illness is on the rise. Mental illness around pastor. There's a pastor out in California who just took his life. By the outside, looked like a successful pastor. On the inside, was struggling with depression and anxiety. And this is an area that churches just don't talk about. Lifeway Research did a study several years ago. They asked churches, do you have any kind of plan to deal with people who've got mental illness? Well, only a quarter of churches had any kind of plan. And very few pastors talked about those kind of things. They don't talk about suicide. Churches think they want to be loving and caring and have support for folks who take their lives, but often they don't have a plan, often they don't have resources. So these are – and mental illness can often be seen as a sin or a sign of spiritual weakness. So we have a lot of as there's stigma in the culture about mental illness, but there's also stigma about – in the church about this. So you just don't, and if a pastor has it, that it's very difficult for a pastor to get up and say, now the text of the church we went to for a while here in, the pastor we had there, he got up and talked about his own depression. And that was very helpful, I think, to people in the church who've had that. But, you talk to folks and you get to know people in the pews, you know that this is out there, that there is mental illness. And I think the taboo can be, if you just turn over to God, everything will get better. So if you broke your leg, some people do faith healing, but most people get their leg set and pray about it because but mental illness doesn't have that kind of, physical manifestation, but it often is a physical or chemical situation that needs medical care as well.
And Bob, why are we so concerned about even bringing up some of our deficiencies like this in public? I mean, we referenced in the first part of our segment that we're often busy impersonating maybe somebody else or somebody who we think we're supposed to be, especially when we head into those church doors. What issues do we have with just demonstrating the weakness that we have? Because that seems to be a consistent theme within the biblical text, that it's in our weakness that he is made strong. Why do we have such trouble with this?
Boy, that's the million-dollar question. I do think that there is this, especially in in evangelical circles, where the reality of new birth or conversion is really important to being born again and being a new creation. Those are so strong, and the testimony, I think people feel that maybe they're letting God down. Maybe I think just in general, our society has a stigma of mental illness. It's getting better, but I do think that. It's really interesting that you can talk about, say you have diabetes or you have a heart attack or other health conditions. People just talk about it. But in general, in our culture, and then in churches are reflective of that, we just don't talk about mental illness because I think there's a shame that you're weak. There's a shame that maybe you're not trustworthy. I think those are some of the kind of things. And I think we've really been structured by the culture around us, which doesn't think that mental illness is something you can talk about.
Well, and certainly, and I think that's a great point, is that when we live sort of and breathe the air of the idea that we're pursuing happiness and however we define it, that if we're not feeling happy in our lives, we must be falling short of something. And we can really end up blending ideas from American culture with kingdom ideas, which really are often quite different.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is that it is it's a very painful and difficult thing for people with mental illness to admit to themselves, you know, that you need help. So it's hard to admit to someone else. But yeah, I think the churches can be a place where people get this kind of support. And when people know, they generally are helpful. But, you know, we've had high profile cases. I think the one I think of is Rick Warren's son, Matthew, who took his own life. You know, then you can't pretend when that happens, you can't hide it and pretend that it's not true. And they have done, the Saddleback Church folks have done a lot of just talking about it. And, you know, but I was talking to someone the other day who told me about their a relative who took their own life and, years ago, and it was still painful. So these are very, for pastors, because if you go back to pastors for a second, I think it's hard for pastors to admit it because, the role of a pastor can be tenuous, right? There's lots of the number of people going to church is going down. Some denominations are shrinking. So if you're a pastor and you've got this issue and there's a lot of competition for jobs, you're not going to be as honest because you don't want someone to think, oh, that person's got to, you know, that can be disqualify you in the eyes of some churches. So some churches may say, well, we don't want a pastor who has depression.
Yeah, you know, you're so right about that. And just so much to get into. We got to run for a top of the hour news. But boy, I sure appreciate your time and your perspective on some of these issues. Love to have you back again on Faith Radio Mornings.
Oh, would love to be. Thank you so much.
Have a great day. Great first hour of the show, and excited for the first part of our second hour here as Jim Bilby, professor of theology, is in studio. He joins me on Thursdays, and we have our segment Ask Anything, so cue up your questions. Anything is fair game for Jim Bilby next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.